time now for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And on deck this evening, it looks like Dr. Adanna Grandison. So let's go on over and see if we can invite Dr. Adanna Grandison to step on in and help us with the Better Health Radio Show. Good evening, Dr. Grandison. Are you with me?
Good evening, Gregson, and good evening all of the listeners across Barbados. Thanks once again for having us for yet another Better Health Radio Show this evening. And this evening, our show is action-packed. We have a full set, impactful, powerful women. It's an all-ladies cast this evening. They're coming in as some heavy hitters on a really important topic. Now, as I don't know how many of our listeners out there may know about, and a very interesting time, which is known as World Obesity Day. And World Obesity Day was actually just yesterday. And so we thought it prudent to have three of our heavy hitters in this area to talk to us. But before we start, I want to just remind our listeners that you can call in this evening if you want to call in, because I am sure that you will have questions, and I am excited for you to have your questions answered because you have the experts here with you this evening. And so you can call in at 434-1790. Again, that is 434-1970 to have your question answered. And certainly, I do know that we often have persons who are not so comfortable with calling in. And for those of you who are not comfortable, you can WhatsApp us at 266-4862. Again, that's 266-4862. So this evening, we have three persons. One who you know, I'm very sure of it, and that is none other than Dr. Kia Lewis. Dr. Kia Lewis is actually one of the co-hosts here on the Better Health Radio Show, but this evening she's here in a different capacity. Dr. Lewis is not only a general practitioner at Kairos Medical Clinic and Lifestyle Center located in Belleville, St. Michael, but she's also a healthy lifestyle advocate who's very passionate about her calling as a healthcare professional and educator. She has been a guest speaker at numerous places, including schools, churches, businesses, and organizations across the island. But most importantly, Dr. Lewis is the current chairperson of the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition and has represented this organization on their radio, television, and social media health promotion campaigns, as well as their outreach initiatives. We also have this evening Mrs. Nicole Elliott, who is a public health nutritionist and Barbados Childhood Obesity Advocate. She is a member of the Diabetes and Hypertensive Association and the Alternative Snack and Beverage Team. Nicole is a PAHO community health promoter and is actively involved in community development and research with a focus on issues such as food security and nutrition within the Caribbean's vulnerable groups. And last but not least, we have Ms. Francine Charles, who is the program manager of the Childhood Obesity Prevention Program at Heart and Stroke Foundation. Good evening and welcome, ladies.
Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
So I wanted to start off this evening, first of all, by giving us a bit of a picture, a global insight in terms of what is really happening with this very topical issue of obesity. As I said, World Obesity Day was yesterday, and the theme for this year is Let's talk about obesity, changing those perspectives. Let's talk about obesity. And so it's really, really important to start that dialogue by probably giving you some very important statistics. It is estimated that by 2013, not so far from now, given how quickly these months are rolling by, we will have approximately 1.9 billion people around the world who will be living with obesity. And that global economic impact for both the overweight and obese population by that same time in 2035 is estimated to be 4.32, not million, not billion, but trillion dollars that you're going to have by 2035 if we continue as we currently are. Certainly, there has been a 100% increase in childhood obesity expected between 2020 and 2035. And internationally, it is expected that 1 in 4 of us will be living with obesity by 2035. But it goes further. And so we need to dig a little closer and look at these numbers now within our local context. And if we look at the amount of obese persons, male and female, we have 23% of our male population being obese and 43% of our female population obese. The most concerning component about some statistics that I'm going to give you is our childhood obesity statistics. 1 in every 3 children between the age of 13 and 15 is considered in Barbados to be either obese or overweight. That's very concerning. So the average household we have probably has in about 2 kids. And if we had to have a friend over, essentially one of the 3 of those children will have obesity. Okay, that's very concerning. So I want to start this conversation off this evening, but this evening appears to be very hot. I'm seeing Gregson signaling me even before we can get our speakers out the gates this evening. Gregson, am I understanding you correctly?
That is correct. Gentleman said he has a question for you.
Okay, well, I will start off with that question and then I will get that ball rolling on this very important topic. So let's hear this question from our first caller.
Yeah, good evening to Miss Granderson and the panel. I just want to tell Miss Granderson that I'm seeing her through the phone at like one of the parade horses at the Garson yesterday. Granderson, Garrison. That only meant to be a part of a point line that I say was mentioned. That. But the thing with the obesity is that maybe we're younger, like I'm going to be 66 in our age group. We don't see a lot of sweets and all of this thing, and we never got obese. But we don't seem to be running about a thing now. The people, the children now, they're just playing with their fingers. And that it was causing a lot of the obesity.
Okay. So I am very interested in this question, the comment that you've made, and I am sure that our experts, our subject area experts, are really going to delve into this today, because I know we often think about, when we think about obesity, a few terms come to mind: big bone, fat, and only looking at the probably just the fat percentage, but never really looking at the long-term consequences and possible sequelae of this actual disease profile. So I am going to start the ball rolling, first of all, because I think anytime we start a topic, we need to really set down some ground rules in terms of some definitions. So straight out the gate, Kia, what is obesity?
All right, thank you, Dr. Granderson, for your question. And really and truly, obesity is a complex chronic disease. A lot of people don't see it as a disease. And so that's one of the first things I wanted to start with. It is a complex and chronic disease. But if you look at the World Health Organization definition, it's really defined as an abnormal or excessive fat accumulation And importantly, it presents a risk to health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a difference between overweight and obese. So in terms of saying directly, what is obesity? When do we get to the point where a person is obese? We have to look at something called the body mass index. And that is simply a parameter that we use to determine whether your weight is appropriate for your height. So we divide your height, your weight by your height. Yes, mm-hmm. by your height squared. And a normal BMI is between 18.5 and 24.9. If your BMI is 25, between 25 and 29.9, you're considered overweight. And a BMI of 30 or over is considered to be, you're considered to be in the obese range. There's class 1, class 2, and class 3 obesity. So if your BMI is between 30 and 35, you would be class 1. Class 2 would be between 35 and 40. And then, of course, what we would call morbidly obese would be class 3, which is a BMI of 40 or higher. So that's strictly looking at the body mass index definition of obesity. Now, there are other definitions. We can look also at central obesity, mm-hmm. because we know that the weight that is stored around our waist actually puts us at a higher risk of cardiovascular disease than, and when I say cardiovascular disease, you know, your heart attacks, your strokes, your high blood pressure, et cetera, than weight that is stored perhaps around the hips and the bottom, right? And so that is a parameter we have to take into think about when we're looking at the health effects of obesity.
Right. And I'm glad that you stated that it is a complex chronic disease. So what really causes obesity?
So you're looking at obesity, you have a variety of factors. You're looking at a person's biology, you're looking at their genetics, their mental health, the environment that they're growing up in, their access to health care as well. And of course, their access to a lot of the unhealthy foods, the ultra processed foods and mm-hmm. drinks that we talk about. But mm-hmm. the important thing is that obesity is not caused by a lack of willpower. And I want to drive that home. It's not people who are just lazy and can't control themselves and therefore they're obese. When we look at, there are two very important hormones I want to point out very quickly. It's leptin and ghrelin. We look mm-hmm. at leptin. Leptin is one of the hormones that helps your body to know that you're full and you don't need anything else, in layman's terms. Ghrelin is the opposite to that. Ghrelin is the hormone that says, well, you're hungry, right? And so if you have variations in the way that your body responds to these hormones, it can contribute to obesity. So we talked about genetics. We know that from twin studies, which is where we look at twins that are growing up in different places, it's shown that even twins that grow up in different family environments, both of them, if they have the tendency to become obese, they will become obese. So that's how we know there's a genetic component. We look at things like medical disorders that can contribute, like Cushing's disease, disorders of a part of the brain called hypothalamus, to name just two. But there's also evidence that the bacteria in your stomach, what we call the gut microbiota, if you have a different composition of that bacteria, it can also contribute to obesity. And that's in a big way where environment comes in as well, apart from consumption of unhealthy foods. Mm-hmm. The other thing would be certain medications. So medications like insulin, I think people know that quite well, can contribute to weight gain. Your sulfonylureas, which are anti-diabetic medications, also medications used in mental health. So your antipsychotics, antidepressants, and then the steroids, the glucocorticoids, they can also contribute to weight gain.
So
deprivation,
Kia, I just want to put a pause there because I don't want persons to walk away thinking that they shouldn't take their insulin.
Absolutely.
And they shouldn't take their anti-diabetic medication, and they shouldn't take their anti-psychotic medication or any psychiatric medication. But I yes, there is a link, but I know that generally us doctors, we want to work with you, the patient, certainly to find what is the best fit for the patient. So it's not just a matter of saying, okay, well, Dr. Lewis said that, you know, the insulin is going to make me fat, so I'm done with this insulin, because then you will have another problem on your hands. Am I correct?
That's very, very important. Very important point to make there. What we do, if we know we're going to put you on a medication that has the potential to cause you to gain weight, that's a discussion that we need to have with you, because patients deserve to know that.
Absolutely.
And then you work along with you in terms of your lifestyle. So what are you eating, your level of activity? And we can help you to tweak certain things so that you do not have the effects. But the truth is, the effect of your disease is going to be worse if you don't take your medication than the effects of losing, I mean, gaining a couple pounds. So
Right.
that's a very important point. Don't stop taking your medications.
I see Gregson is flagging me again, letting me know it's hot and heavy in the studio. The calls are rolling in. Gregson, I'm turning over to you for a second call.
All right, sir, go right ahead, please.
In 1996, I was speaking to a physician here, and he observed that wherever fried chicken has gone around the world, there was also a concomitant rise in obesity and diabetes.
Absolutely. You're correct. I don't doubt that, and I can tell you that that is one small piece of this evening show where we will be talking about some of those lifestyle modifications and certainly diet and the impact that it has in terms of ensuring that you do not become obese and what are some of those modifications that we should make. Dr. Lewis?
I'm glad the caller brought that up because that's actually the next point that I wanted to raise.
Absolutely.
Extremely important. So we find that persons are less active now, and thus the increase in the obesity rates. But more importantly than the decrease in activity is actually the consumption of high calorie foods, high energy foods, poor quality foods, the fattening foods that we talk about. So that Western diet that has been adopted has contributed significantly to our obesity rates. So yes, fried foods, high calorie foods, the sweetened beverages, they all contribute to obesity. And the last thing would be stress. We know that certain stress hormones, they inhibit the action of the leptin we talked about. Remember, we said leptin makes you feel full and it helps you to use energy, but certain stress hormones can inhibit the activity of leptin and therefore lead to obesity. So as you can see, it is a complex disease with multiple causes, and we need to address all of them.
So I was on medication for diabetes myself, and it is almost a year now that I have kicked those medications. I have my diet is changed. I have more vegetables in there, and
Very
I
good.
feel quite well. As a matter of fact,
Excellent.
yes, most of the time on mornings I get a 5 point this, 5 point that, sometimes a 4 point this or 4 point that. And
Great.
during the day, I might pick up after eating breakfast and maybe lunch, pick up a seven. So I am cool and I enjoy it. It can be done, and I can discuss my project with any physician or any bunch of physicians, and I would hope the day will come when we will see the amputations drop to zero. Zero. And a better lifestyle adopted here in Barbados. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you
And
kindly,
I
sir.
think you are a great advocate and living proof that what you put in, what you consume, certainly can have a significant impact. And not only trying to monitor those weights, but certainly in terms of handling some of the complications that can be associated with diabetes. But Gregson, I'll turn back over to you.
Yeah, just a quick question. Somebody is asking that Dr. Lewis just repeat the chart she gave regarding the body mass index. If you're at this level, could you repeat that
Dr.
for?
Lewis?
Yeah, that's no problem. So we talked about a normal body mass index being between 18.5 and 24.9. A body mass index of between 25 and 29.9 is considered to be overweight. You're looking at a body mass index of 30, so 30 and anything over would be obese. Certainly between 30 then and 34.5, you're going to be looking at class one obesity. 35 up to 39.9, you're looking at class two obesity, and class three or morbid obesity would be a BMI of 40 or higher.
Well, I can guarantee you somebody's calculating their BMI just about now.
Yes. And because I believe, Gregson, they're actually calculating it, Dr. Lewis, which units are we working with? Because we're not working with pounds. So no. I need you to, and we're certainly not working with centimeters or feet and inches. So I need you to make it very clear to our listening population, what are the units we're working with? Because you have to do a bit of a configuration. Certainly, most persons tend to measure in pounds. Everybody jumps on a scale and measure in pounds. But how are we measuring with BMI? Is it not kilograms that we're looking at?
Yes, you're looking at kilograms and meters square. So for me, what I do, I just simply put in the pounds, because most people measure in pounds.
Correct.
And I take the pounds, I put it into a converter on the internet so that I get what the kilograms would be.
And that would be a division of, I believe, 2.2, right? So if you if you have pounds and you don't, you can't get to a computer quickly, you just divide by 2.2 and you can certainly get to kilograms. And most persons will probably go centimeters. And obviously you would just divide by 100 and get to your meters. So you should be fine there. And it's not meters, but as Dr. Lewis said, it's meters squared.
Yeah.
Kia, let's take this conversation a little further. And I can see that both Francine and Nicole are ready to jump in. But I just want to lay a bit more foundation first. What are some of the complications associated with obesity?
So I like to say to people, the reason why we have these discussions, if it was, you know, possible to live with obesity, when I say that, if it was likely to live with obesity and there were no complications, you could just live a good life, we wouldn't need to be having these discussions. But the reality is that there are several complications associated with obesity. What we call the all-cause of death or all-cause mortality, so death from any reason, increases with obesity. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
But things that we know more commonly, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, they also, the risk of that increases with obesity. One of the other things would be liver disease. We know, we usually think about liver disease in the context of alcoholics, but we are seeing more non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. We're seeing that even more so now than the alcoholic fatty liver disease. Mm-hmm. And that can contribute to significant illness. Type 2 diabetes as well, that's another thing that can result from obesity. Coronary heart disease, increased risk of stroke, acid reflux, gallbladder disease. And then you have disorders of your muscular system, so like osteoarthritis, your musculoskeletal system. You're more likely to have arthritis because of the impact of the excess weight on the joints. When we look at women's health, PCOS, or polycystic ovarian syndrome, there's an increased risk of that among persons who are obese. And infertility, not just in women, but also among men, male causes of infertility. So obesity contributes to that. Mental illnesses such as clinical depression and anxiety, they are higher among persons who are obese, the obese population. And the last thing I wanted to touch on would be cancers. There are many types of cancers that are associated with obesity. Breast cancer, cancer of the liver, cancer of the stomach, cancer of the pancreas, the colon, the womb, the ovary, and I could go on and on. So we know that obesity has a significant impact on persons' health and their general quality of life. And the younger persons become obese, the more likely they are to see the consequences of that obesity in early life. Mm-hmm. And more aggressive the disease course tends to be. So they tend to end with the complications like the amputations, the heart attacks, the strokes that we talked about earlier.
Right. Nicole, I want to turn the floor over to you now, because certainly you are a nutritionist. What is really the role of a nutritionist or a dietitian in the management of obesity?
Hi, thank you, Dr. Grandison. The role of a nutritionist and a dietitian is to help persons navigate the environments that they're in and the diseases and complications associated with those diseases, to try to help them to get to a place where they can naturally select items and naturally gravitate towards items that are better for their health. Most times it will entail a medical nutrition therapy, where they will see how the food that they're eating is linked with their medication, because a lot of persons go on eating foods and not knowing how that will affect the medication that they are taking in relation to the particular diseases they may have. And it's to see how we can get a balance between, sometimes it's not always everything that that person likes, but for the upfront and to get the person to at the point where we want them to be in terms of their health, we will look at ways in helping them to find information in terms of how to shop, when is best to eat certain foods, the combination of foods that they put together, how best that will work for them, especially if they have, say, heart disease or diabetes or hypertension. And to ensure that those things that we are doing are not hampering the use of the medications that they're taking.
Okay, that is quite important, certainly, because I think even before you become obese, there are some of us who really don't know what are some of those good healthy options to choose. And sometimes just navigating that area is a concern because it's so easy to gravitate towards the wrong foods. I heard Dr. Lewis speaking about the importance of diet and what we consume. And are there really any major barriers or difficulties faced when looking to create a treatment plan for a patient? And this is Miss Elliot.
Definitely there is. The number one, for me, the number one thing that persons will have issues with first is the relationship they have with food to start with.
Right.
The most difficult thing to break is the relationship between a patient and and the foods that they like. And then we have the food environment, which will influence the relationships that they have with those particular foods. And then we have the food systems in which we operate in, how it's grown, how it's distributed, how it's marketed, how it's selected, and how it's prepared. So those are things that we would have to, that are major barriers, because we know when it comes to marketing, most times the foods that are not best for us are the ones that are better marketed. We know in terms of distribution, they are better distributed. They have a very vast selection, and in terms of preparation, we know they're very quick to get to, they're very easy to prepare, and you don't have to take a very long time to get them. And then also medical diseases, those will be barriers as well, because they would dictate what meal plans or what type of diet that person can go into based on the type of conditions that they may have.
Okay, I just want to jump right back to Dr. Lewis a short bit, because Miss Elliot just spoke to us about creating that treatment plan from a dietary perspective. I just want you to go over very quickly the wider picture of treatment, because it's certainly not just diet and the lifestyle modification, but there are other things that can be done. Certainly other lifestyle modifications, but then sometimes we need to go beyond the lifestyle modification and incorporate medication, possibly surgical intervention. But before I allow you to answer that question, I can see Gregson flagging me, letting me know we have a caller on the line.
Go right ahead, please.
Hello, good night.
Good night.
Yes, doc. I keep on hearing people calling and saying that the fried things is what bothering me. And a lot of we believe, I believe in a sense too, but then when I really sit down and I think about this thing, could be wrong, I could be right. I believe that rather than care what you do with pork, chicken, all these things that we were frying, we were thinking, it can't, it won't stop anything. I believe what these things feeding on is what I'm bugging we. What they feed on, what they're giving them today, is what destroying we. And that is a way of making money. You know, you're getting.
I'm hearing what you're saying, but
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that I necessarily fully agree with you, although I can understand the concern, because I think that is a an independent and also an important concern. Yes, Now we're seeing foods with lots of pesticides and hormonal input and stuff like that. But certainly, even the whole green, fed, well, pasture-raised, organic type animals that you may have, if we had to break them down into food groups at their very core, they will provide you with protein. And in most cases, especially those red and white meats, saturated fat. And that saturated fat is a serious concern for us, especially we would have heard of Dr. Lewis speaking about the cardiovascular risk that causes. And yes, the hormones are separate and distinct. The pesticides can cause over time an accumulation of toxins possibly within the body. But what we are looking at this evening and what really is the focus and certainly a very significant concern is the fat content that we can have in foods. We're not telling persons have eat no fat at all because there's an important role of fat in the diet. We're saying that we need to take a very critical look at the types of fats we use because all fats are not created equal. But let's take a very critical look at the fats that we use and let's actually use our fats a little bit more sparingly, especially those bad fats that can cause increases in these very negative outcomes that we can have. Dr. Lewis?
I also wanted to add, in terms of the caller's comments about what the, you know, what is being fed into the food at the beginning, that's only a part of the puzzle, as Dr. Randerson would have highlighted. A lot of our problems come from processing the food.
Mm-hmm.
After they've been fed the pesticides and all of this, we process the foods in such a way that we do not preserve a lot of the nutrient content.
Mm-hmm.
We add a number of additives that make us eat more, that are deleterious, are dangerous to health. So your high salts, your high sugars, we then add fat to the food that already has natural fats in it. And then we add a number of chemicals that interact with our body in such a way that encourages us to store additional weight. So you are looking at not just how the food is produced at the level of the farmer, you're looking at how it is transported, because even in transportation, it's losing nutrients. Then you're looking at how it is processed, and what you end up with in many cases is a highly processed food, which is calorie dense, so it has lots of energy, but it's nutrient poor. And that is where we are having, if we look at the difference between how people ate before and how they eat now, the biggest difference by far is the introduction of ultra processed foods.
Yeah.
Okay. Look and see, think about yesterday and think about today. Look and see how things was yesterday and bringing up them the same stocks, bees and all them kind of things. And look in today and see how you do it. A different.
No, thing. We agree. I think we are agreeing with you, caller, on some points, because, yes, even in the foods that some of the animals are fed, they're very calorie dense foods. So the feeds that we're giving them, they're calorie dense. But it's not just that that's causing the problem. It's a multifactorial issue that we're really looking at, that we're really struggling as well to really not only completely understand, but really try to get a fix and a handle on it. And so I really think that I am hearing you, but I'm hearing you say something else apart from what you're saying, which is I think that you're trying to say we need to get back to things like ground provisions, whole grain foods, and cleaner sources of fat. Is that what I'm hearing you saying?
Yeah, good. Listen.
Okay, good.
Even the ground food now. Look and see how what we put into the ground food, at least even putting it into the earth to get the ground food at least spring up in maybe a couple of minutes. Even all those things young together is what destroying everything. And it's a way of like, I want to make money quick. I want to get money. You even destroy your own self. You may have bought somebody, may not use, but when they look at the whole, the earth, everything running through everything, it running, if you planting something else, but next door, planting and spraying with something else and doing something else. So it all buttoned up in one. So I don't think as long as we go and don't care, we fight, it's going to be the same thing, and it may even worse.
Well, I have 2 points here. I think I'm going to let Miss Elliott go first, because given that she's a nutritionist and dietitian, I think it's very important that she weighs in on this, because I think she's the guru in this space. Miss Elliott?
Hi, yes. So in terms of the ground provisions, yes, ground provisions, the way of farming has changed drastically, but we can't ignore the way of preparation has also changed drastically. We have gone from, if you look back, like how we were looking back in terms of how things are grown, if we look forward to where we are now, things are grown, things are prepared, a very vast difference between before. Right. And now, we consume the same ground provisions, but we consume them fried.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff is fried. And even if it's boiled, after the process of boiling it, then we put some type of like fat sauce onto it. Or we put it into some kind of highly processed cheese item. Or mm-hmm. we dredge it in the bad stuff. And I don't want to say bad stuff because I don't want to villainize any foods. But we do add those things that make it extremely processed to those items that we would have once before it had very basic processing done to it, where we would have probably boiled it, we would have roasted it, we would have steamed it, or we would have baked it. Now we are carrying these items so far down the process chain that by the time we actually consume them, we are only consuming them probably for fiber or for roughage, but we are not even getting any vitamins from them because the processing procedures are so long and so intense that we are eliminating most of the vitamins and from the food items that we are actually eating.
And I agree with you, Nicole, there. And as you were speaking, my mind cast back to things like roast breadfruit and roast fish. Before, it was something that would be done on the beach. You would take the roast breadfruit, you would open it up, you would eat it, you would take the roast fish, you dip it in some water, the salt water, and that was it. Now, we've started to evolve, and we've seen this evolution happening over the years, where you add in the mellow cream. And now you want to add on the pigtails, and you want to add on the pieces of pork, and you're adding in the red herring that's highly salted, and it just keeps building. Yes, it appeals to the taste buds, but really, how are you impacting your body in terms of getting the nutritional content that you really need? Dr. Lewis?
Yes, This was an on the point the caller was making. Not sure if the caller is still with us or if that.
Yeah, I think he's still here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, thanks for what you're saying. That is my belief, and I can say things like that. Thank you. So don't care what you do. Once we continue in this way, we got to level something that we're doing that is very foolish, yes. And you don't know what it is. But I think that is what I'm bugging the whole system.
All right, sir. Thank you kindly for your contribution.
Right. Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Lewis.
Yeah, Dr. Granderson, you had asked about treatment. And yeah. I wanted to touch on this very quickly because I think it's important. The treatment of obesity, the research has evolved. You know, one time we just looked at lifestyle modification. For the most part, that's what we looked at. But there are three pillars now that we look at in the management of obesity. The first being lifestyle modification. So that's looking at the diet. We will send to a nutritionist who will assist. There are different methods that you can use. Some persons prefer a gentle reduction in the energy intake, but studies seem to suggest that a very low calorie or a very low energy diet at the beginning and then transitioning to a more sustainable diet seems to work pretty well for weight loss long term. Yeah. Of course, different professionals will have other opinions. So that's the diet. Exercise. The biggest component in terms of exercise is not necessarily the calories burnt. That's important. But really, it is allowing persons who are obese to maintain their muscle mass while they lose weight. That's very, very important to support strong musculoskeletal strength, good musculoskeletal strength. Yeah. So that's your lifestyle modifications that you're looking at. The other thing would be, we talked about the psychology. So letting that person see a psychologist. So that's also included in lifestyle medication modifications so that you're changing their relationship with food, your triggers, etc.
Right.
we talk about no medication. This is where you get a lot of pushback because people say if you take weight loss drugs, and there are a lot of weight loss drugs out there that have given medication a bad name because they did not work effectively, they did not have long-term effects. But research has shown that just like diabetes and high blood pressure should be treated with lifelong medication in certain classes of persons who are obese. Now, hear me now, this is not everybody, but a doctor who looks at you, who is an obesity specialist and says, okay, we tried this or that, and based on your risk factors, we think that lifelong medication is necessary. These persons significantly benefit from medication. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those medications, the reason for those medications, we know there are about 9 hormones that are involved with reducing your desire for hunger or increasing your satiety, your satisfaction. There are about 9 hormones. And those medications target different hormones and different areas of the brain to help you to maintain your weight set point. Everybody has a set point. Anybody who's ever dieted or tried to lose weight, you know that you lose it and then you tend to bounce back to your set point. So what the medications do is that they help to lower your set point so that you can maintain a lower weight, right? We've all heard about Ozempic and, you know, some of the other weight loss drugs. And I want to make it clear that these are drugs that are used, indicated for obesity. So there is there's a very, very clinical purpose for these drugs. Overuse is the problem. People who are not overweight or obese is not recommended by a doctor, and they're using these drugs and giving them a bad name. So medication should always be prescribed by a doctor on an individual basis, and it should be a part of the management of persons who are at risk for cardiovascular disease, et cetera, are at higher risk. The last thing that would be surgery. Again, this is seen by many people as an easy way out, but surgery has been found to be extremely effective. It is not just about reducing the amount that the person can eat or absorb, but we know that those complex hormones that are involved with the set point for obesity are also altered by bariatric surgery. Right. So bariatric surgery works very well for the morbidly obese persons. You have things like gastric banding, which isn't quite used as much now, your sleeve gastrectomies, but the Roux-en-Y bypass is probably the most common that is used. And I won't go into the mechanisms of those because I'm not a surgeon. But suffice to say that if you're discussing with your doctor surgery, and surgery comes up as a part of the discussion, don't feel like it's an easy way out. It is actually a medical or surgical way of treating a very complex disease at the hormonal level.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Lewis. And I think that's really important because we don't see obesity as being a disease process. And I think that that's part of the reshaping that we really need to have. And I'm glad that we are having this discussion. Ms. Charles, I want to turn the floor over to you now. And I know that you are certainly the manager at Heart and Stroke Foundation for the obesity program. So tell us a bit about the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Adana. Now, this program, before I can even touch on the program, I think it has to be seen in a full context. As you all discussed this evening, it became clear that I think people can see that there is a real issue with obesity. But I think also the link between both overweight and obesity to the non-communicable diseases is what has really created at a worldwide level and at the WHO level, a significant kind of a sound of alarm that we are going in a very wrong direction because this affects not just people's personal lives, but it also affects your national purse strings as well, your national productivity, the future development of a country. So it's a very vast thing, and it's so interesting how obesity is linked and to such a wide area. So much so that as part of the Sustainable Development Goals, that of course the entire globe is looking at as we move towards 2030, a big part of that is the reduction of non-communicable diseases, which obviously then touches very significantly on obesity, but even more on childhood obesity as a real area of prevention. And so the Childhood Obesity Program is actually part of that global work. So we have partners all across the globe who are working on the very same thing that we are working on. In some cases, it falls under what we call food policy programs. We focus on it from a childhood obesity aspect. And basically, the program here in Barbados started in 2018 and was really aimed at ensuring that countries move towards policy-driven environments that are based on scientific evidence and that are based on the WHO's guidelines towards, so you see, if I don't know if you're hearing the music, I hope not, but we are pushing the World Health Organization's six policy approaches for how to reduce childhood obesity and as a result, reduce the potential for the onslaught of non-communicable diseases. And so that's what the program focuses on. Here in Barbados, we have looked at our environment and our focus at this point are on three particular policy areas. And the first, of course, is the school environment, because our school environment is extremely obesogenic. It is just an environment. It's almost like a big food court, right? And so that needs to be reframed. And so we are looking at the introduction of school nutrition policies, and very much a part of that being the removal of a lot of the unhealthy foods and drinks, and a replacement by more healthier alternatives. And then, of course, another area for us has been the sugary drinks tax, because as you know, Barbados, I mean, it's across the globe, but Barbados's global average figures for the consumption of sugar sweetened drinks is three times the global average. And so we have an issue here with sugar. And so there's been a move towards getting our tax to a place that will cause greater elasticity in terms of people's purchasing desire for sugar sweetened beverages. And then we are also looking at front of package warning labels, how we can use the octagonal in particular, because that has been proven by science to be much more effective among a general population, very easy to read. And so we are trying to get warning labels placed on foods based on the PAHO nutrient guidelines. And then our last one that we are really, that is coming up onto our into focus is the whole issue of the direct marketing to children. Because I think when we talked here about the culture of eating, a lot of that is being framed. Now, before it was culture, it was slavery, we ate a lot of salt. But now the issue is the heavy marketing of ultra processed foods to increase people's capital gains, not just locally, but at a global level. And so that's been the focus of the program.
I'm glad you actually really highlighted, Ms. Charles, some of the other policies that you're really working for, advocating for and supporting, especially that sugary drinks policy that you have in terms of having a tax in place. And if you think about Barbados historically, and I first heard this spoken about by Professor Hilary Beckles, where he spoke about that link, a historical cultural link for Barbados, a country that used sugarcane to deliver us from a lot of our financial woes that we had. And it was very intricately laced into our society. You put sugar in everything down to stew. When you're making your stew, you're putting sugar in. And so it's so easy for us in the Caribbean context, and certainly in Barbados, to consume this. And it's really causing lots of problems, increases in diabetes. But most importantly, there is a link as it relates to also obesity. So I'm very, very happy to hear that, you know, you have a very holistic approach in terms of how you are attacking and really waging war on this fight against obesity. Dr. Lewis?
I just wanted to add to what Francine was saying in terms of the importance of policy. A lot of people talk about personal decisions, you know, mm-hmm. personal responsibility. We have to understand that within the context we're living in, what is most easily available is what people will use. And Absolutely. What is marketed to them, marketing is a science. So what is marketed to people is what they will buy. You know, you sit down, you don't feel like eating something, and then you see an ad with a hot dog or a hamburger in it, and all of a sudden, all you can think about is a hot dog or a hamburger. Correct. And companies are very strategic in setting up systems that allow us to purchase unhealthy foods. If it's all around us in the schools, when we step outside the schools at our homes, we will buy it. So policy is extremely important in creating a what we call a supportive or a healthy environment where people can make good choices. And this is why there's that huge focus by the coalition on health policy. And really, by the World Health Organization, that's where it originates on health policy to protect not only children, but the wider population.
And I think that's important. Some place that we see that quite often is even the supermarket. Mm-hmm. The foods that are placed at eye level are the foods that are not always the best for us. The ones that you really have to bend over to look for or look up, you know, something as very simple as that. If you're really paying attention, you will see that some of the more caloric dense foods, but not nutritionally dense foods, are there. I see that we want to have Nicole Wayne, but I am going to pause you, Nicole, for one quick second because Gregson is flagging me, letting me know we have another caller. Go ahead, Gregson.
Go ahead, caller.
Good evening again. This is Anthony Hopewell, and good evening to all the doctors and everybody in the studio. I hope you all are happy and well.
Good evening, Mr. Hope. How are you?
Well, I'm medically unfit, so I just say I am where I'm at. But one of the things I want to know is that when I was 18 years old, I'm 67 on the 12th, is next. And I was used to have serious problems with the fuel and before I converted to a better functioning lab. And I walk around asking,
Mr. Hope. Can you repeat what you just said? Because you were actually breaking up there a bit, so we weren't getting you very clearly. Can you just repeat what you said?
I said when I was a lab technician around 18, I used to have serious problems with my throat because of the fumes. I used to go around to all the places and they would do boiled stuff because I was aware of the Miller's glycation and all this. And nobody in any certain place said, we don't cater to that. But the thing is that up to today, still, we know that Miller's glycation causes advanced glycation in products. And, well, it isn't explained properly, but we need to explain that when you heat oils and stuff, that is known as non-enzymatic glycosylation, which is called glycation. And that is the demon. And that the body uses glycosylation to do things appropriately to regulate the enzymes and the immune system and all that, to get it done properly. So when we keep using all these fried stuff, I want to know if you were able to pinpoint and say, well, look, all these fried things are adding up to this kind of problem. And then to the fact that the body is either going to store things if it can't burn it. The next thing is the cholesterol. We need to let people know that cholesterol stays in the body for 280 days out of 360. And it makes 1,000 milligrams and only uses 200 and about 220. So then when you eat other things with cholesterol, you are accumulating that level of cholesterol in your body that has to spend 280 days out of a year. And that is damaging. So I want to know if collectively, if you have been able to point to any of these situations, because you all need to start asking people to serve more boiled stuff rather than fried stuff, and nobody's willing to do that as far as I am concerned, because now I have to go and buy food and I can't get any boiled stuff. And before, when I used to cook for myself, I used to do strictly boiled stuff, boil all my meat, boil everything like that, steam everything. No, I can't get it, but I am a skinny person, so I don't have to worry. But for people who are going through these things every day, I'm wondering if anything is able to help out, because this situation is really terrible.
And I think I'm going to first put in a piece and then I'm going to hand over to Nicole, because I also want her to answer another question. But certainly I think that is the reason why we're having conversations like this, so that persons can really understand the importance of eating properly. I would have heard a few weeks ago when I got a few lashes. I don't know if you remember, Gregson, when I got a few lashes on air for speaking only about food, but not about physical activity. But we know that when we address food and address what we consume, we can lose weight even before we add on the exercise. And we can improve our health status even before we add on the exercise. So it's absolutely important to get the what we put in our mouth. It shouldn't just be good for the mouth. I think there's a Bajan saying we're good for the goat mouth, this bunny tail. And so you have to just be very careful of if you're going to be consuming stuff only for your taste buds and not really looking at how is it benefiting my body on a whole. But I'm going to defer to the expert. Nicole, I want you to answer that question for the caller. And I also want you to tell me about some of those alternative snacks and drinks listing that we have here on the island, because I think we need to also help our listeners out there and essentially call them to action. Nicole?
Yes. So again, persons don't wake up on mornings and say, hey, I'm going to go down the road. I'm going to purchase the most unhealthy thing that I want to have, I can have. People generally want to eat better, but they just don't know how. And so hopefully not only for our school age kids and for our parents, but for the general population, our alternative drink and beverage, our alternative beverage and snack list would help those persons to be able to navigate the supermarket when they go in there to shop. And so we created this list with a criteria where we said, hey, we know the environment that we're living in. And so we understand what we are working with and we're going to work with you. So we were asking in terms of sodium and when it comes to snacks, we said, hey, we are going to take snacks that are in between 130 to 240 mg. And in the ways we're going to do this, we're going to look at the back of our food label and we're going to see, hey, how much sodium is in here? Is it between this range? Then it's okay for me to for my kid to take it to school or for me to have it. And obviously, this is a jet. Yes,
can
please.
Can you repeat that value in terms of the salt content?
The salt content.
Our listeners need to hear it again.
130, between 130 or less than 130. To 240 mg. Bearing in mind, this was the common trend between most of the things that we were able to find. Right. In terms of sugar beverages, our beverages that we are going to have in terms of the sugars, we want it to be no added sugar whatsoever. And we don't want it to be 10% juice, 3% juice. We want it to be 100% juice. So again, we want it to be 100% juice. No added sugar, and I want to be clear about the no added sugar. I know persons are going to look at the label and see sugar in it, because if it is coming from a fruit, it will contain sugar. What we are going to be looking for is to make sure that it doesn't have any added sugar, and not just by seeing it on the front of the label, but looking at the back and ensuring that it doesn't contain those artificial sweeteners or any added sugars, regardless of whatever type of sugar it is.
Nicole, I want to put a pause there 1 second again.
Yes,
so
please.
What about the drinks that say 100% juice from concentrate?
Well, that is a controversial area because sadly to say, our food environment currently, the mass amount, if we remove most of the drinks that are from concentrate, there'll be left with water on our shelves, to be honest, because there are not many, if there are five of them, say that can prove that they are not from concentrate, be it that we have a whole lot. And that is something that we as a society and as a country need to work on as it relates to production and as importation. We need to find alternatives, and there are some, but we need to try to have those choices available for our people to be able to choose from. And because we didn't have that great alternative to choose from, working with the environment that we currently have, and hopefully, I hope someone is hearing this, that they would decide, hey, we are going to try to cut down on our concentrated drinks, and we are going to try to bring in the 100% juices that are not from concentrates. Okay. But working with our food environments, which always influences our choices and what we have available, we decided that we will go with the... Just for now, our criteria would be no added sugar and must be from 100% juice. And we emphasize the 100% juice and not a juice drink, because we know that they're going to have some that are going to say no added sugar. But then when you look at them, they're going to say 3% juice. That is not a juice. That's a juice drink.
Right. And so I want to stick a little bit in here, because I know quite often persons will say, well, I'm going to make a natural juice. But the natural juice then we're having tons of sugar because they need for it to taste good.
Yes.
Do you have any concerns there?
We do have concerns there. And because of that, we are not able to regulate those natural juices made at home. Mm-hmm. And I know persons are going to say it's made from cane sugar or they made it from this type of sugar or honey. But really and truly, body processed sugar as sugar. So if we go ahead with that, I don't know if Auntie Paula is home making hers with 10 grams of sugar or 3 tablespoons. And the truth is, we know we make drinks at home. We don't measure with a measuring cup. We don't measure with a measuring spoon. We just keep it in and taste. And our taste buds is not a good way of evaluating how much sugar is in a product.
Dr. Lewis?
I just wanted to add, in terms of the alternative beverages list, we talked about 100% fruit juice, which we are allowing, but that's not really our preference. Our number one preference is water.
It's water, yes.
Encourage a lot more water intake. So we're working with the Ministry of Water Lenses. We're hoping we can encourage persons. We are encouraged by, you know, the fact that students are not going to be allowed to drink water throughout the day. Coconut water is another good alternative that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Then we talked about things like soda water and then the water that would contain your fruits. So you just put in fruit, nothing. It's just flavored. Not flavored waters that you make, not the ones that you buy that have any artificial sweetener. So the focus is really water, but understanding that we have people who are accustomed to sweetened beverages, we are weaning them off slowly
into water.
Thank you. So that's what it is with the beverages.
Mm-hmm. Any parting words, because we are 2 minutes over our time, and I don't want to cause any problems for Gregson, and then we have any issues next week. Don't want to get any lashes. I've gotten enough lashes in a year from 2 weeks ago. I'm scarred. But I just wanted to know, ladies, do you have any parting words for our listeners out there in terms of what they can do really to assist themselves, or where they can turn to? If they themselves have any issues, or certainly they know anyone, whether it's an adult or a child, who may need some assistance with the struggle of obesity, or even earlier than that, if they're overweight and they say, you know what, this show has made an impact on my life and I really would like to take the steps to correct what is happening with me or my loved one, what can they do?
I just want to say really quickly, I don't want people to go with the idea that obesity is a medical condition, so therefore I can do nothing about it. Lifestyle changes do make a big difference. So you can draw from a lot of the information that you've heard here today and begin to make small changes. Secondly, certainly visiting your doctor if you realize either you or your child is showing signs of overweight or obesity, so that you can be medically directed in terms of the best pathway to successfully losing that weight long term. And then at a policy level, Heart and Stroke Foundation Barbados and the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition, there are lots of resources people can find. HSFB, their social pages. I'm going to leave that to Francine if that's what she wants to discuss. But certainly there's a lot of information out there in terms of advocacy, what we are doing in the general environment, why it's important, and also what persons can do at an individual level for themselves and their families. So we have to work together. We have to work on ourselves as individuals, and we have to support policies that will help us to live healthier lifestyles.
Francine?
No problem. I will take it one block. And I think that one block, if you were to ask me one major focus, I want to speak to parents. And I want to say that we have an opportunity to protect our children and to save them from an onslaught of things that, I mean, not just leads to death, but just leads to a lack of productivity in their own lives. And the reality is that life has changed, and these ultra-processed foods are really taking us down much faster. And so you're having children with hypertension, and this is not something that should ever be happening in our small countries. And so as a result, I'm speaking to parents and I'm saying, let's begin to support the process. It tends to be easy to say, well, you know, the foods are too expensive if they're healthy, or there's this reason or that reason. But I would say to parents, let us try to make a big change in the way we are preparing foods. Let us support the policies within the schools that we are going to be facing in come April 25th, when we start the third term. There are going to be changes in the schools. Let's support those changes. Let's begin to give our children more water. They're not going to die. And finding ways to prepare healthier meals. And as Kia mentioned, on our platforms, Heart and Stroke Foundation, on IG and on Facebook, we'll give you some ideas. But I also want to encourage parents, if your children are already showing at-risk tendencies for overweight and obesity, the Heart and Stroke Foundation actually has a youth gym that operates on a Saturday for at-risk kids. It is by referral, so your heart doctor needs to refer them by letter to the gym. And you can call 537-3312 to speak to someone at Heart and Stroke. They're able to set you up to attend those classes. The minimal cost, which encourages both the exercise and physical activity, but also provides nutrition information and classes, and also helps parents with parent education. And so I really want to encourage parents to go out of their ways. I mean, for me personally, as a parent, my children are now grown, but I feel as if in understanding what is happening in the world where people are marketing to us things that really and truly are so harmful to us, and probably are being very slow in making that change, I said, as parents, let's take some responsibility and let's fight back by making decisions for our children.
Nicole, I'm going to let you have the final words for this evening. I know you are all about nutrition. Is it that we need to probably even consider going to the market more frequently to get some of our fruits and vegetables?
Yes, we should be going into the markets and bargaining like back in the day. Let's use our bargaining techniques to get stuff. And even when we go into supermarkets that we frequent, very popular, especially the ones that are in our communities, bargain with them as well. See if we can get some bargains from them, because we are their consumer. We are the ones who have the most power. And in terms of the alternative list, I know a person saw it came out, and it was a very hot topic. And I know that persons have a lot of questions as to what to do. How am I supposed to know these things have these amounts, and if it's correct drink or correct snack for my ward or my child to carry to school? I want you to know that we are not leaving you alone, and that you can, there's going to be an email set up that you are going to be able to send us your queries or send us options that you might have found that we haven't found, and that you can send those things to those emails when we put the emails up on the Heart and Stroke Foundation page, so that we can respond to you and say, hey, go ahead, this is a good option. Hey, try this instead. So you will have a helping hand. Just bear with us and try to give us your most help as you can, because it's for the benefit of the nation's children, and the nation's children are our children. And if we can do that together, we will have success once we help each other. So look out for the email on the Heart and Stroke Foundation page, and do not hesitate to ask any questions. No question is a bad question. And I'm sure, and I'm telling you, that someone is going to reach out and they're going to answer you to help you to navigate the new policy coming up in April.
Ladies, please. I want to say thank you so much for coming out this evening. This is the first talk for the year about obesity here on the Better Health Radio Show. I hope it is not going to be the last. Let us continue to talk. I'm changing the slogan for this World Obesity Day, because I know it was yesterday, but let's move away from just thinking it's one day to focus, and let's continue to talk about obesity. I want to say thank you. And let's not just talk at the level of professionals and the content experts, but let's really have some of those grassroots conversations. Talk within the community, talk in the barbershops, talk at the supermarket, talk in the hairdressing salons when you're going to get your nails and your eyelashes done. Talk. Let's really talk about the health of our country and the health, certainly, of our children, who are our future. Once again, I want to say to our listeners across Barbados, thank you so much for joining us this evening on the Better Health Radio Show. And once again, ladies, I thank you so much. And Gregson, thank you for being absolutely wonderful as usual. Good evening.
Well, thank you kindly. That's Dana Grandison, Dr. Dana Grandison, your host this evening, along with Dr. Kia Lewis and Nicole Elliott. and Francine Charles. But I want to pose a question to Francine Charles before we go. It's a personal question, Madam Charles. And you have the option of saying none of your business, or you can answer. I am here thinking that I know you from somewhere. Were you ever in the employ of a company called Shell Antilles and Guyanas Limited? Ever, ever?
No.
All right. I'm no, dead wrong then.
I'm a media person from day one.
I'm dead wrong then. Oh dear, it's a good thing they bet on this because it'd be in serious trouble.
You know? I think you would have lost a lot of money. You would have lost a lot of money.
Yep. So, thank you all, ladies.
You would have seen Francine's face. Greg, Francine has been an iconic media person. She's being, you know, thing, iconic media person all the way back.
Yeah, so I thought,
you would have seen her face, heard her voice in a lot of the major Caribbean and then local programs.
Yeah, I know about the media part, but I thought that we used to work together. I thought so. But anyhow, getting old, so forgetting a lot of stuff. Anyway, ladies, I thank you.
No problem. Bryson, keep your money in your pocket.
Yep, I will do that from now on. And I won't ask people their business on here anymore either. Anyhow.
Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you kindly and take care.
Take care. Thank you, guys.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, there you go. The ladies in charge for this evening's edition of the Better Health Radio Show.